Welcome to Box Office Battle, where we take box office bombs, forgotten hits, and underappreciated classics and pit them against each other for the right to go on Mount Valhalla. I'm Biggs.
I'm the Beard.
I'm Zach.
Hey, Zach.
Hey.
I sort of forgot what I was doing halfway through my name, and I was like, I'm just going to ride this out until I remember what's going on.
Well, we're doing the movies of George Clooney.
Yeah. Damn you.
Brandon's the judge today and hates George Clooney. I am covering Return of the Killer Tomatoes.
While I'm tackling Coen Brothers joint, Burn After Reading.
Clearly underappreciated.
Super duper underappreciated.
Or properly appreciated.
Super duper underappreciated.
Oh, early Jeep Dab.
This movie's got jokes, yo. It's not about tomatoes. It's about people, like a real movie.
Well, why don't you start out?
All right.
Since you're so anxious to talk about your movie.
So Burn After Reading is a classic caper, slapstick humor through mistaken identity, deceit, and back channel negotiations gone wrong. We first meet in this film a man named Osborne Cox, played by John Malkovich. Now, Osborne works for the CIA, but he's just found out he's going to be demoted due to his drinking problem, which he takes a lot of offense to. He does not handle this demotion well. And he does say to his Mormon coworker, "Of course you think I have a drinking problem. You're Mormon. Next to you, we all have drinking problems," which really swung me onto his side, because I don't like when Mormons look at me for having a beer, or 9, or 11, or 43.
But if Pepsi made that beer...
In any case, he now has to go home with his tail between his legs. He's angry, he furiously quits, and he goes home to see his wife, who is, let's say, high strung. And she's played by Tilda Swinton at her icy British best. Basically, she is a woman, she's having an affair, and she just hates her husband. Just hates everything about him. She doesn't like the way he looks, doesn't like the way he talks, doesn't like the things he likes. And now she even has more reason to be disappointed in him. But she's kind of happy he quit his job, because she sees this as a chance to justifiably divorce him and go on with her affair with George Clooney. Now, George Clooney is a former bodyguard who now works for the Treasury Department, and he's cheating on his wife with Tilda Swinton, and eventually with a little lady named Litsky, played by Frances McDormand. Frances McDormand works at Hard Bodies, a gym, and she's trying to save up money for plastic surgery. She has a whole bunch of cosmetic surgeries she wants to reinvent her body. And she gets tangled up into things through Brad Pitt's character, Chad. Now, Chad is just a real idiot. Just a real idiot. But Chad happens to find a disc in the Hard Bodies dressing room. What's this disc? This disc contains classified information belonging to one Osborne Cox. Now, how did this get here? Well, Tilda Swinton, looking for reasons to divorce, copies all of the files off John Malkovich's computer onto this disc and accidentally leaves it at the gym, where it will be found by Brad Pitt, unbeknownst to her, who takes it to Linda and their boss, Richard Jenkins, Linda being Frances McDormand's character. Frances McDormand sees this as an opportunity to make some money to pay for his cosmetic surgery, so they try to blackmail John Malkovich, which does not go well, so they take it to the Russian embassy in an attempt to try to screw him over. This also does not go well, but it does tip off a very paranoid George Clooney, who believes people are out to get him, especially because he's cheating on his wife with both Frances McDormand and Tilda Swinton. Now, as all these things are bouncing around together in a way that seems confusing, that's when our boy J.K. Simmons steps in. J.K. Simmons is a superior officer at the CIA, and the man who fired Osborne Cox brings this whole palette of plot out to J.K. Simmons, who's bewildered. And he just says, "Just come back to me when it makes sense." And that's the first of two times we see J.K. Simmons. So some other nonsense happens that I'll get into a little later. A whole bunch of mistaken identities, a lot of betrayals, a flat-out murder. And we come back to J.K. Simmons as everything has sort of wrapped itself up and everything is back in its rightful place. And J.K. Simmons asks us, "What have we learned?" And the CIA agent says, "I don't know, sir." And he goes, "I guess not to do it again, huh?" Sending the message that sometimes idiots do idiotic things for idiotic reasons and there's nothing to be gleaned from it.
All right, well, I reviewed Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. This is the sequel. Return of the Killer Tomatoes. I'm sorry. You're correct. This is the sequel to Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, which came out 10 years earlier, and this takes place 10 years later.
What a shock.
That's right. Anyway, this was after the Great Tomato War. Remember that, guys? It's, if you saw Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, you'd remember.
I was very young when that happened.
I've either done too many drugs or not enough drugs to remember the Tomato War.
They don't teach it in school.
Okay, great. So not enough drugs.
So this film opens up with John Astin. You may remember John Astin from the old Addams Family show from the 60s. He played Gomez Addams. Brandon, maybe in your childhood you checked out Erie, Indiana?
No.
All right, well, and he's in a ton of shit. Usually has a mustache.
But most importantly, he's in the Tomatoes movie.
That's right. Return of the Killer Tomatoes, and then also the other two sequels that came out that I'd never bothered to watch. So this movie was done in a more innocent time when you could make blowjob jokes and have extended side boob and have that movie be PG, even though PG-13 existed as a rating. Which I unfortunately found out watching it with River. So that was interesting. Anyway.
Did you have to have some real frank conversations?
No, it was just...
you managed to dodge that bullet?
A lot of staring straight ahead. Especially when they opened the film playing the wrong film, which is bare-breasted women on the beach.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Have I...
That's where the side boob came from.
I don't know if I say this enough. I'm not at a time in my life where I can have kids, because I really cannot be trusted around children with the type of media I consume.
I will repeat, it was PG, and I saw it as a kid, so I was like, this has got to be okay, right? Anyway, so basically what this movie is about is it's a tale of a mad scientist who takes tomatoes, turns them into people. Now, he has an assistant who is a hot woman that he basically uses as a sex slave of sorts, and then he creates a lot of commandos that he's going to use to eventually wage another tomato war, we can assume. Now, he also creates a fuzzy tomato, which is nicknamed FT. Huh? Clever nickname, whoa, right? That's how I remembered the character's name, guys.
All right.
He decides he's going to throw out the fuzzy tomato because there's no telling what its genetics will do to the rest of the tomato strains. She sees it go in the garbage and feels horrible for it, so takes it as an opportunity to leave into the pizza man, who's always delivering pizzas without tomato sauce because tomatoes have been outlawed and after the tomato war.
Naturally.
So they use like peanut butter or jam or chocolate sauce for pizzas. It's real disgusting, guys. I feel,
why haven't they gone to Alfredo?
The listeners can't see my
face. I love a good Alfredo pizza, so...
But I'm not reacting well to this information.
So she comes up and immediately tells him, like, oh, can I give you a blowjob?
Just flat out.
Just flat out tells him.
Like, all right.
Basically, they go back to his apartment. Now, we also meet George Clooney, who's his roommate, who has concocted a plot to get women by having a contest to win a date with Rob Lowe, and then somehow they wind up in his bed.
Can I just point out that your film takes place in a universe where Rob Lowe is more desirable to women than George Clooney?
I'm going to take you back to 1988 before you were born. Rob Lowe was definitely more desirable than George Clooney at the time.
I'm just saying it seems silly from a 2014 perspective.
Yes, it does now. Especially when you look at creepy Rob Lowe who watches women, watches people swim at the rec center.
Or Crazy Harry Rob Lowe.
That's right. Painfully shy Rob Lowe. But yes, there was a time when Rob Lowe was a legitimate sex symbol. He was like the sex symbol for...
He's still kind of a sex symbol now. Really? Have you seen that jawline? God damn.
Oh, he just seems like a comedic tour de force.
Oh, he is.
Now.
But he's handsome while he does it.
Yeah. So anyway, so basically, through a series of misadventures, they find out that John Astin's mad scientist is going to try and take over the world.
With tomatoes.
With tomatoes, yes. Which, everybody is very scared of tomatoes. And the tomato girl, who the guy doesn't know is a tomato, is trying to get him to tone down the rhetoric of the tomatoes. Because his uncle was a hero in the tomato war. And so he thinks the only good tomato is a squash tomato. But eventually he figures out the error in his ways. You know, there's a lot of series of misadventures. There's a lot of meta stuff, guys. There's a lot of jokes about the, you know, making a film. Like, there's a scene where they run out of money, and so George Clooney says, you know, we should just start cashing in on the product placement. And so every other scene is like filled with Pepsi cans and like just all kinds of things to sell the movie. Eventually they wind up really rich, and so they're not worried about product placement by about the end of the movie. But this is a running joke for about 40 minutes, I'd say. Pretty bad. Anyway, so...
I'm glad to know your movie wasted 40 minutes.
Oh, no, it's not just product placement. They just cake it with everything, dude. It's kind of genius. So at the very end of the movie, basically the couple of Good Tomatoes, FT, and the sex pot help out the people, and they beat the mad scientist. But don't get too comfortable, because at the end of the movie, after the credits, a la Marvel, we find out that there's Carrot Commandos. Yeah. So, which I guess I found out through looking at the internet plays out in the next Tomato movie, which I never bothered
to watch. Of the storied franchise.
That's right, of the storied franchise.
So when the Coen brothers delve into comedy, one of the things they find as a big source of humor is dim people. I think we can all agree on that. Like, a lot of the characters in The Big Lebowski are dimwits. A lot of the characters in No Brother Where Art Thou are dimwits. Like, they find a lot of humor in good-natured dimwits. Out of all the dimwits we've seen the Coen brothers create and bring to our screen, this might be the dimmest group of people they've brought yet. Which, of course, means the humor is exponentially greater. So we start with John Malkovich, who is essentially just a ball of impotent rage, and he's obsessed with the idea that everybody else is a moron, and yet throughout the movie, he does not make a single good decision, which is a great bit of irony to see played out. George Clooney, it's a really great George Clooney performance in that the thing people give him a lot of crap for, which is sort of always playing handsome, charming bachelor guy, he's playing that role in this, but he's also constantly lying to everyone, which gives it this weird sort of neurotic twinge that you don't normally see out of him, which adds a... It's basically like he spends the movie looking over his shoulder, afraid someone's finally going to call him on his bullshit. And it's a great way to see George Clooney, because you so rarely see him vulnerable, that to see him genuinely afraid for 90 minutes is hysterical. Brad Pitt is the dumbest dum-dum who ever dumbed. He spends most of his time in the movie dancing goofily, thinking he's figured out deep CIA secrets and running on treadmills. He's like a Labrador Retriever. Like, he needs attention. He needs you to think that... He needs to think that you think he's smart, and he needs walking 4 or 5 times daily. Like, he's just a ball of dumb energy. Frances McDormand is sort of adorable in her stupidity. She's in her late 40s, early 50s, the character, and she thinks that getting plastic surgery is going to change the world for her, when she's like a good-looking woman for her age. But so she does these things sort of motivated by narcissism that make her look silly, but she's so sweet that you can't help but root for her anyways. Richard Jenkins is got this sort of sad hangdog thing going the whole movie. People just trample all over him. And then Tilda Swinton is probably the smartest character in the movie, but she's also kind of dumb. But she's dumb, you know, like really mean ice queen women. She's one of those, and she's the type who thinks she's got everyone figured out and she's got this master plan, but nothing she plans works out the way it's supposed to. Because even when the things she plans do start to go her way, people can so barely stand to be around her that the people she's counting on doing her bidding just bail out halfway through. It's a great comedy of errors. That really is the best way to describe it. If you like seeing a comedy about fuck-ups fucking up, this is a movie for you.
So you talked about your cast of characters. Well, let me tell you about a great cast of characters. We're talking Return of the Killer Tomatoes. We've got a mad scientist who's developed a way to take tomatoes and through playing music could turn them into different people. Well, guess what? If he plays a Michael Jackson song, he's got a tomato that looks like Michael Jackson. If he plays a hard rock song, he's got a commando tomato. And if he plays part of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, he's got a sex pot. I'm looking forward to Beethoven. I don't know about you guys. Got to
collect them all.
That's right. Now, we've got another guy whose name escapes me at the moment, but he's the main character.
So he must be super memorable.
They just don't say his name a lot. That's the thing.
Okay, fair enough.
But he's totally memorable. Dude, like, has a hard-on for the girl, and yet, you know, He just doesn't like tomatoes because that's what he's been told. We really explore the duality of his existence. Like, you have his sex drive on one part and you have his bigotry on another part.
Oh, well,
and somehow he's got to balance these things to become a good person. You know what? He manages it in a very realistic way. You've got George Clooney. Now, I know, Brandon, you're not a big George Clooney fan, but let me ask you a question. Are you a fan of Riggs and Lethal Weapon?
I am a total fan of Riggs.
This feels like a leading the witness.
Well, guess what? In this movie, George Clooney has Riggs' hair. It is the same haircut that Riggs has in Lethal Weapon. And I'm talking the first Lethal Weapon. Like, it is all Riggs'd out. It's amazing.
Now, you half can't, mullet, half, like, flyover.
Jerry curl. Yeah.
There's business in the back, for sure. It's wonderful. This movie is spectacular. I didn't even mention the uncle, who's a hardcore commando type dude, like very hardcore, who learns about his bigotry as well. And he doesn't have to learn it through sex because he's not a duality character. We don't have to waste the time on duality of every character. This character is just a hardcore bigot who learns the error of his ways. He's got a friend who he calls in to help, who's a deep sea diver, who never gets out of his scuba gear, even though they're on land. And he's got another friend who's this huge black dude who's in Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, who's a master of disguises. So he does things like he pulls off playing a young blonde woman in one part. It's amazing. And they don't use CGI in this. This is all practical effects. Absolutely Oscar-worthy performances. I feel like it got shafted in 1988.
Okay. I got two things. The first is short, the second's a little longer. The first, I was sort of with you until you said Oscar-worthy performances. Now, I understand we have to sell our movies, but let's not just destroy our credibility in the process.
The characters are a little trashy. They're like Oscar the Grouch. Whatever.
Oh, okay. That
you want me to elaborate? There you go.
So, Brandy, you don't need me to tell you this, but the listeners might. The Coen brothers are masters. Yeah, they're masters of a lot of different things. One of the things they're true masters at is matching tone to story and finding the right way to make dialogue fit into a story in a very naturalistic way. They aren't like Aaron Sorkin, who I love, but he has a very familiar rhythm to his dialogue, or, you know, your David Mamet types or your David Milch types. A lot of dudes named David have very distinctive rhythms to their dialogue. The Coens are masters at sort of shaping and molding those rhythms to the story. Now, this is a story that takes place in Washington, D.C., and because of that is a pastiche of a lot of things, including politics and espionage that we really see a lot of. And fittingly, we have a dialogue that sort of harkens back to popular works of entertainment set in those worlds. So it's very quick, snappy dialogue, but they punctuate it with a lot of F-bombs. So you get these very verbose, bit like almost mini monologues from these characters, except for then you have John Malkovich screaming fuck in between every other word, and it's this sort of beautiful whiplash the dialogue takes you in, and it so pulls you into this unique world that simultaneously feels lived in and familiar that by the end of the movie, you find yourself talking in the same rhythm. It's something to behold, the way that manner of speaking worms its way into your consciousness, and it's the kind of thing that doesn't get mentioned enough when talking about writers, and it's the kind of thing that deserves more applause.
Shut the fuck up, Donnie.
You're out of your element.
You're absolutely right. The Coens are masters. They've done so many great movies. It's almost too many to name. You named a couple, The Big Lebowski. I would say their last one was pretty great. They've done so many great movies. This is not one of them. This is not one of the ones people mention when you even talk top 10 Coen brothers. But Return of the Killer Tomatoes, here's the company that it keeps. The Godfather. That's pretty great, dude.
Okay, just to be clear, the only time someone has said the company Return of the Killer Tomatoes keeps is The Godfather is right now on this podcast.
There's a scene where a guy talks in an Italian accent and they do a song that sounds like The Godfather waltz.
Oh, okay.
All right.
I think this is going to be my last point. And it's just to say that I've been honest with you. You know, I've not tried to play up anything. I have just laid out what's in front of me. Now, you know me. You've gotten to know me pretty well, Brandon, right? Like, we're...
Yeah.
You know the type of things we have in common in terms of our interests. We both like sort of silly, trashy entertainment we like so bad it's good. We like when we can find humor in things, right? And it's good to value that, and that's the kind of movie Return of the Killer Tomatoes is. That being said, sometimes it's worth just taking a step back and looking at the big picture. And the big picture is Biggs is trying to convince you that a movie about tomatoes is serious art. And sometimes we have to call a spade, and sometimes a movie about tomatoes is a dumb fucking movie about tomatoes.
You're right. I'm going to call a spade here. So, Brandon, I'm quite familiar that you're not a George Clooney fan, right?
Yeah, that's been established.
Pretty safe to say. This movie probably set Clooney's career back by 10 years. He wasn't getting ER after this movie for a while. Okay? He wasn't in any notable things for a while after this movie. And he did some work. I looked into it. This wasn't his first movie. I was under the impression this was his first movie. He was in another movie, and he did tons of notable shows before this. Return of the Killer Tomatoes, he has about 2 years before he does anything after that movie. So if you hate George Clooney, I got the movie for you.
All right, you made a killer argument.
You did finish strong. I have to give credit where credit's due.
Oh, I was holding on to that one.
That was your trump card.
That was a beautiful, beautiful argument.
But?
Unfortunately, I have to give this one to Burn After Reading.
Ah, yeah. I have to make a noise because the listeners can't see me dancing in my chair.
And it's one of those things that I look back and I vaguely, vaguely remember Return of the Killer Tomatoes. It's one I've seen, but it's just really vague. And you made, I'm sure, as best an argument you can for that.
It was kind of tough.
And Burn After Reading is one of those that I've seen and just kind of forgot about. And then you bring back and some of the stuff I really enjoyed about that movie, like you brought a lot of that back. So that's where I'm going to have to go with this one.
So how would you grade them?
I'm going to start with, Killer Tomatoes, and I've seen it as a child. I mean, I was probably preteen-ish or younger. So I'm going to have to actually go an incomplete on that one.
Just give it off of the memory.
Incomplete.
Okay.
There is like almost zero memory like retained from any of the movie I've seen. Burn After Reading is a really tough one to grade. I'm going to go satisfactory minus on that one. And it's one of those things I wanted to like it more than I did. It felt like there was something missing to that movie. It was one of those things, and I've only seen it once, so I kind of wish I would have rewatched it just to catch a lot of the nuances that I hadn't seen before. It was so close to being a decent watching movie, but it's just something was missing, and I can't nail it down to what was missing, so I'm going to have to go satisfactory minus.
Return of the Killer Tomatoes gets a needs improvement minus.
Oh, you've actually seen it?
Oh, yeah. Okay, I went through a pretentious asshole phase where instead of hanging out with people for Halloween, I sat at home and watched shitty horror-ish movies, and that was one of them. The Tomatoes movies were one of them.
How many of them?
Oh, God, I can't. I watched a shitload of stuff. There's probably two Halloweens.
Of them.
The first two, and I might have watched a different tomato-related horror movie at some point.
See, I didn't
like
even 50 know.
Like 50-foot tomato or something like that.
Yeah, I didn't even know there was like two more sequels.
Yeah, it's crazy, right?
Today.
The only reason it doesn't get an unsatisfactory from me is because a movie with tomatoes can't be that bad. Like, it can't be all bad. If it has crazy tomato, like, it can't be all bad. Burn After Reading, this was a movie when it first came out I really enjoyed. I thought it was super underrated. Upon rewatch, I turned a lot on this movie. the John Malkovich plot and character aren't that interesting. John Malkovich is good in the role, but the character, there's just nothing to grab onto. Tilda Swinton, I normally love her, but she's just so mean-spirited throughout the movie that you don't understand, like, why anyone would be around her, period.
How they got married in the first place. Yeah,
like, she's just like, awful. You don't understand why Clooney puts up with her. Like, you don't, she's just awful. Clooney's legitimately funny in it. Brad Pitt is hysterical to me.
I definitely give
he
that one.
He is amazing in this movie. Just the way he moves makes me laugh. He's got this goofy bleach blonde haircut, and he's dancing all the time, and he's, like, constantly chomping on gum. He's hysterical.
You know, I had a boss who hit the gym every morning before coming to work, and there's a lot of that...
Of that in him?
That character in him, and That was one that actually, like, resonated through.
Yeah, he's so funny. He's just the dumbest dummy you've ever seen in your life. He doesn't understand why, to meet a CIA agent, he shouldn't be wearing bike shorts and a spandex sleeveless shirt. Like, he doesn't get it. He's the best. He's so funny. The movie takes a turn for the worse as soon as, spoilers, George Clooney shoots him in the head. It really does take a turn from there. Richard Jenkins does great with very little screen time as sort of this cuckolded, unrequited crush on Francis McDormand, who's
Richard
also very
Jenkins
good.
Always does I great, love that by guy. The way. Like, anytime I see him in something.
And J.K. Simmons in two scenes
also
is
great.
The MVP of the movie. He is just... He is essentially just bewildered about why he's even dealing with these people. And he's got the best line of the movie at the end when he goes, well, just come back to me when it makes sense. It's just great. He's just kills it.
It's
in the
almost
movie.
Like he's a stand-in for it. He is very much a producer.
Well, he's the stand-in for the audience too, where he's just going, what is happening with these idiots? He is so good in these two little scenes. It's an okay movie with some really great moments and some really good performances. A lot of it doesn't work. Brandon's right. It's definitely missing something. It's a relatively short movie. It's just a little over 90 minutes. But it's not quite there. It's not one of the stronger Coen Brothers efforts. Now, when I give this grade, understand I don't mean in a vacuum this is the grade I'd give it, but because it's a Coen Brothers movie, I hold their work to a higher standard. So when I say a needs improvement plus, what I really mean is relative to other Coen Brothers movies, it's a needs improvement plus. But that's the only grade that really feels right.
So with Burn After Reading, I'm going to give it a satisfactory minus. It's not putting it in the same prism that you're putting it into. So it's the Coens, so anything they do is going to be satisfactory to me. I mean, they're really good directors, but it is my least favorite of all their movies that I've seen. I'm sure that there's ones worse. I'm not going to pretend like I've seen every Coen Brothers movies. I've definitely seen all the notable ones.
For me, there's just one in particular that stands out as far and away my least favorite.
What's that?
Lady Killers. I do not like that
movie. See, I haven't seen Lady Killers. I haven't seen that either. That was the one that, like, I was surprised that the Coen Brothers did. Yeah. It didn't seem... Yeah, and I've heard things where... It sounded like they didn't really have control over that movie.
Yeah, that's like a legitimately bad movie.
Yeah, and I've heard like producers and stuff on it kind of took control of the movie, and they don't really claim it, so...
And they shouldn't, because...
So I'll give them a pass on that one, but because of that, I'll give it a satisfactory minus. Like, there are things that make me laugh. It's entertaining. Dude, Return of the Killer Tomatoes is a shit show. Is it yet another case of me hoping it was so bad that it was good? It's so goddamn dated, and there is some fun eye candy in the movie for sure. But once
Clooney
again,
in his hair.
Yeah, I mean, I was not exaggerating when I say, like, it looks like Riggs's hair, like, danced off his head and then, like, did a mamba onto, like, Clooney's head. And you look at Clooney and it's like haircut aside, it's like, god damn, dude, like, there's no way he would have been like a sex symbol in the 80s. There's just no way. Like, he doesn't, like, somehow as he got older, he got more handsome.
He's continuing.
He refined
weird,
well.
Dude. He's continuing to get more handsome.
That's all I can say about Clooney is he refined well.
And his wry sense of humor is there. Like, I love George Clooney. Mm-hmm. It's definitely there. You could see
all the elements of what makes him Clooney are there.
But he's just like, he hasn't quite figured it out
and
yet.
That's probably not the right vehicle to unleash it. So
and it is such, every part of that movie is just so goddamn bad, dude. And then like it horrified me even more when I realized, like, so they made a cartoon off of this movie. Like, it wasn't off of the other Attack of the Killer Tomatoes movies, it was off of that movie. But then realizing that it was a PG-13 movie with side boob and blowjob jokes and all kinds of uncomfortable jokes about riding crops, and there's like porno movies in the background in one part, and I'm like, how the fuck did this get PG? Like, even in 88, it boggles my mind.
What is going on?
PG-13 existed for 4 years.
Can I tell you, here's how it got a PG. They took it to the MPAA. They told them the title and showed them some marketing materials. And they're like, yeah, that looks like a PG to me.
Probably. You're probably right. But they made a cartoon series off of this movie for children. And I vaguely remembered that because I was a little too old for the cartoon. It was like in the 90s. So I was a little too old for it. But like off of this movie. And then like I think about back to my childhood and I fucking saw this movie. And my mom she let me watch the original one a bunch of times. This one was only once. And now I get it. Now I get why I couldn't rewatch that one. Because I remember that as like, oh, that's a more interesting one. Well, of course I was interested. I was going through puberty when I saw that movie. Anyway,
you know, it's actually interesting.
It's bad, and I gotta go unsatisfactory on this one, just straight across unsatisfactory.
They actually made a 30-minute, it was a special, like Halloween special for, with Monsters vs. Aliens, produced by DreamWorks, that basically took the Killer Tomato line and they changed it to pumpkins and carrots, basically were the...
Oh.
So it's actually still has life out there.
Oh, it's got... Dude, it's on Hulu. I mean, it's got some kind of life.
Somebody out there is getting high and watching it.
Somebody's putting
Highlander 2 like,
and Return of the Killer Tomatoes on Hulu.
I mean, they're still like... They're pulling pulling plot lines out of this and still like pushing it out into the media.
You want to know what's crazy about this too is I was looking up the director's credits. So he did Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, and then he did some movie I'd never heard of. Then he did Return of the Killer Tomatoes and two other Killer Tomatoes movies. Then he changed his name and did a TV miniseries, and that didn't work out. Then he went back to his name, and the last thing he directed, which was 2 years ago, was an EA Sports game.
Wait, hold up. He had a break for decades and then an EA Sports game?
Yes.
Wow.
So this is the caliber of director we're talking about.
One more reminder that in Hollywood, you can fuck up royally and still get work somehow.
Let me be clear on this. These movies clearly were independent. I mean, like, when you watch it, it oozes independent movie in the 80s. There is no way that a big studio produced this. Like, I don't doubt that it got distributed because I had to have heard of it somehow.
Yeah, because it didn't just appear one day.
Yeah, and like kids in my class and stuff, we all knew about these movies. Like, we were all about the Killer Tomato.
But they were
movies.
Independent films.
Yeah. They were definitely like.
They'd have to be because listen, I know a lot of stupid movies got made in the 80s because of cocaine, but there's not enough cocaine in the world to make someone go, yeah, make the Evil Tomatoes movie.
Yeah.
There's just not enough cocaine.
And the first one that came out, and I kind of want to rewatch it, but I remember it pretty well. And they show clips of it in Return of the Killer Tomatoes. I'm like, yeah, I totally remember all that. But I saw it a bunch of times when I was a kid. And my mom loved that one, too, because she said it was like a spot-on parody of a lot of monster movies in the 70s and 60s.
And I can believe that's where the appeal of this
But this is not that at all. Like, the other one is literally like you see tomatoes are like being pushed by wires or whatever, and then like they'll jump on somebody and the person screams, and then you'll see like ketchup going down a drain or something. Like, it's like, you
and
know
it's
what
unclear
I mean? Like,
about whether the ketchup came from the person or the tomato.
right, yeah. And I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. But there's one other little tidbit that I came across. So the drummer for Soundgarden,
oh no,
and Pearl Jam,
oh no,
wrote the song for Attack of the Killer Tomatoes and then revamped it for Return of the Killer Tomatoes.
Was it Stone Gossard?
Why?
No. He was the the bass player. It was whoever the drummer was. I can't remember off the top of my head. But he did it.
Is it the guy that
name.
Actually kind of went insane?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he worked on a Tomatoes movie.
Well,
no, he was legitimately institutionalized.
Yeah, he got committed, and then
I'm sad about making.
We actually
fun
saw
of
him drum for Pearl Jam.
Yeah,
like he had just rejoined Pearl Jam when we saw him drum. Yeah, yeah, same guy. But he had done it under a fake name, and so the song, the original song, was "Attack of the Killer Tomatoes." Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, and then the new one, it's "Return of the Killer Tomatoes."
And in his head, he was thinking, when you make the third one, better have two fucking syllables. Because I'll be pissed if it's Ingenue of the Killer Tomatoes.
Now, I will say there are a couple of funny things in the movie. Like, it's not totally a shit show.
I mean, there'd have to be.
I don't know. I've seen some comedies where it's like,
no,
I mean, stone face through the
when you're making
thing,
a movie about Killer Tomatoes, just by accident, there has to be a couple funny things.
There are a couple of funny things. They have a really funny song at the end. So they start out with the bare-breasted women at the beach, then they end with bare-breasted tomato women at the beach, and they have a song. I'm not even gonna say the lyrics to the song, like, almost just YouTube it and check it out. It's really funny, and I had to turn it off really quick because River was watching it. And I was just like, I can't do this anymore. So I fast forward because I felt like there had to be something at the end of this movie, and there was, so it paid
worth
off.
It
Carrot Commandos, dude. It was kind of worth it.
So what was the song at the end?
I can't even remember the lyrics. They're pretty obscene, though.
There's not enough pot in the world to make me revisit this movie. There's just not.
All right, so fill those seats so we don't have to.
Hello, what can I do for you today?
Well, I am looking for Christmas presents for my family. Just, I really let it go this year. Do you have anything good for me?
Of course, the We Had a Good Life podcast, which you can find on the Not Safer Network.
A podcast? I guess I was thinking more like a Furby, maybe?
Maybe Montucky Skies is more up your alley.
I guess, is that also a podcast? Because again, I'm looking for something a little more tangible.
Podcast? Why, speak no further. We've got Box Office Battle.
You know, I gotta say, I'm beginning to feel like you're not listening to me. Again, looking for gifts like I can put in a box or a bag and wrap them for my friends and family.
Perhaps shooting the show would be more your speed.
You know, work with me, not for me. Let's try to attack this as a team. Again, gifts, family.
Is your family into art?
Sure, yeah.
Well, then the Thin Man podcast would be right up your alley.
All right, do you have something that's not a podcast? Because this is a little frustrating.
Real Roulette isn't a podcast anymore, but we do have the archives available on the Not Safer Network.
I mean, it seems pretty clear at this point you have an agenda. You're not going to sell me the toy robot. You're not going to sell me the beautiful handbag. And you're not going to sell me that cool poncho. What are you going to sell me?
That's debatable. It's a podcast about arguing.
You know, I gotta say, at this point, I feel like I understand arguing. So I'm tempted, but again, not what I'm looking for.
So you're looking for something tangible that you can hold in your hands.
Ideally.
Well, why not the Not Safe for Network podcast, which you can hold in your hands on your iPod or MP3 player?
Sure, that counts.